All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. It's brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, and I'm Bobby Fenton. And we got a fun show this week, of course, our first season show where we're coming off of a win, so that's a nice feeling. And the Bucks gets a 1-1 with a win this past Sunday over the Panthers, 31-17. And now they go on the road to Denver for week three against a completely injury-ravaged Denver team who's down a quarterback, who's down a receiver, who's down a running back, who's down both starting quarterbacks, who's down a couple of defensive ends. Everything on paper, of course, points to the Bucks going in there and rolling the Broncos. And we'll talk about that on the show today, as well as some things that went on against Carolina over the weekend, but a big difference from week one where the Bucks were unable to get by the Saints. And, you know, we'll talk about this today, but level of competition matters, so that's the biggest thing. And yet, what you're supposed to do against a team like Carolina, who isn't one of the more elite teams in the league, and I'm saying that nicely because they're not a very good team in general, I don't think, but you know, you're supposed to go out and do what the Bucks did on Sunday, and they took care of it. Never felt like they were not in control of the game. It did tighten up a little bit late, got to within one score a couple times in the fourth quarter. But you never felt nervous. Like, the Bucks, I think they're going to win O-meter was always like near 100 the whole time in the second half. Like, you always felt like, yeah, Carolina's not going to win this. And the Bucks held on and got it done. Leonard Fournette closed it with the touchdown run and everything else. So there's a few things I want to go through here today. The first thing, though, as always, is to thank our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford. And if you're looking for a car right now, Bill Curry Ford is a fantastic place to do it. They've always been innovative. They've always kept up with the times, and they're doing that now with COVID, where, first of all, the actual site a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry is a great place to go. They sanitize it constantly. It's huge. Plenty of room for social distancing. Business as usual. Go check things out. But if you're not comfortable or if you have reasons where you shouldn't be out in public as much, they will bring any car you want to your house to test drive it. And if you buy it, and you can bring it and deliver it to you. And they'll do service on your car if you want to have service done. If you've already bought a car from Bill Curry Ford, you know about the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, meaning if you've got trouble, even years down the road, if you're still the one who owns the car you bought at Bill Curry Ford, they'll service it. Well, they can do that at your house, too. They'll send technicians out there if you don't want to bring it in to the service center. But check out the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. And look at all the inventory. Go for a test drive, whether it's in person or whether they bring it to your house. Either way, they'll get it done and know that no matter what, you've got that nationwide lifetime warranty sitting right there waiting for you when you make your purchase. A mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry, they're on the east side of the road, just over that Hillsborough Avenue overpass there, if you're coming from the south. And they've been there for 60 years now, serving the Tampa community. So thanks to them. Looking at this game this past Sunday when the Bucks took on the Panthers. So the Bucks were a 9-point favorite going into this football game. They're supposed to win the game. And yet, we all know, I mean, especially division games, they can go either way a lot of times, and you throw all that stuff out the window. But the biggest thing that jumped out to me, and this is not rocket science, but what was one of the big differences between week one and week two? Besides, yes, the level of competition. Turnovers. I mean, the Bucks getting the turnovers, and they did have one too, with Brady throwing the interception, but the Bucks, what jumped out to me the most was the length of the field the Bucks were starting on. They had five scoring drives against the Saints in week one. Four scoring drives, I'm sorry. And they were in length order, 85 yards, 75 yards, 69 yards, and actually 90 yards was the longest, it was the late one. So they had four drives there. They were all 69 yards or more, and three of them were over 75 yards. Then against the Panthers this week, they had five scoring drives. Here were the yardage lengths for those in order of when they happened in the game. 78 yards, 23 yards, 65, 45, and 46. The 45-yarder was a field goal. And so short fields made a big difference. They had the one, the 23-yard on the first play after a Carolina turnover from the Carolina 23-yard line. They immediately went into the end zone, hit Mike Evans for a touchdown. And it was just that kind of day. Everything was clicking. The Bucks were aggressive, which I always love to see. And it paid off in a big way. The running game on first down was something I harped on after the Saints game because it was very ineffective. And not only was it ineffective, but they insisted upon going back to it over and over again. And even said after the game they wanted to be balanced. And that was like a big concern of theirs. When I said, you know, getting yards should be the only concern. But it did work out better this week. They ran 10 times on first down, and they passed on first down as well. And even in the part of the game where it was a close game, because in the second half you're trying to close them out, you should be running more on first down then. But in the first three quarters, I'm just doing the first three quarters, they ran 10 times on first down. They had 40 yards. That's 4 yards a carry. So much better scenario than it was a week ago when they were getting stuffed and it was second and nine, second and eight, over and over and over. Just getting them behind the sticks constantly and banging their head against the wall just for the fun of it. So, you know, this was a lot better. Now, Tom Brady played well, and he could have played even, I mean, his numbers were good. He had a great game and everything, but it could have been even better without the Bucs drops. They had seven of them. Three of them really stood out. And if you look at what Brady did over the weekend, I'm not just talking about numbers now. I'm talking about, like, quality of throws. There were three plays in that game against Carolina that were just fantastic throws. And, you know, you look at, like, for example, Drew Brees in New Orleans right now, and if you saw the Monday night game, and even the game against the Bucs that they won, it wasn't really that Brees did anything. It was more the Bucs' mistakes. But you look at that game, and then you look at Monday night's game against the Raiders, and I still think it's too early to write Drew Brees' epitaph or anything like that because, you know, right now, it's two games into the year. All the time you hear people saying, and this happened with Brady with the Patriots a bunch of times because they, for a few years, had really poor showings early in the season. And everyone saw, oh, man, he's older now. Is this it? You know, like, looks like it's the beginning of the end. He doesn't look like himself. And people are saying that about Brees right now. I'd hold off on that a little bit. You know, you say something like that, then a week later the guy lights it up for 350 yards and four touchdowns and looks like his old self. These things have a way of not carrying over from week to week. If Brees starts consistently looking this way over a period of more than two games, over a period of a month or 2 months, you know, six, seven, eight games, then we can talk about it. But he does not look like himself. He didn't look very good on Monday night against the Saints, and he's just not the same guy right now. So whether or not he ends up getting better is not my point. My point is, you know, Tom Brady at 43, a lot of those same concerns have surrounded him, and those issues don't appear to be there physically with Brady. Just watching him play the quarterback position, and even though, yeah, he made a bad throw against the Saints in week one, they got returned for a pick six, he overthrew Gronk, then there was, you know, there was another one this Sunday against the Panthers, you know, whatever. But I'm saying physically, like the quality of throws, his arm, the way he's able to move or not move, that all looks plenty A-okay to me. And he had three plays. There was, well, first of all, we had that pass to Scotty Miller in the corner of the end zone. The Bucs were on, I think, like right around the 20-yard line. And Miller dragged across from the left side of the field and over into the, you know, right corner of the end zone. And Brady led him just a little too far. It did hit Miller in the hands, but he was kind of horizontal to the ground. It would have been just a fantastic throw and catch, and Miller couldn't quite hang on. So that was one. If you want to call that a straight drop, I think that's a little bit harsh on Miller. But point is, yeah, okay, that's one that could have been completed. And the Bucs did score on that drive anyway. The other one, there was the pass to Gronkowski, who had no catches on Sunday and only has two catches for 11 yards so far in the first two games. But Brady hit him right in the hands up the seam on a play that was about 15 yards downfield, and it was a drop. There was pass interference called on the play. Looking at the replay, it was debatable if the pass interference is what caused him not to catch the ball because the ball still hit him in the hands. But the point is, that was a really good throw in traffic that Brady still put, despite the traffic, in a spot where only Gronkowski could catch it. It didn't count. Bucs still got a first down, the pass interference call and all that, so it was fine. And then trying to ice the game in the fourth quarter when the Bucs were up by a touchdown, there was a play to LeSean McCoy, who had run a hitch route and kind of held his spot for a second or two, then broke up field and got open behind his defender. And Brady just put an absolute perfect ball right inside the back line stripe, hit McCoy in stride. I mean, it was just a thing of beauty, and McCoy couldn't hang on. And I'm not bashing the guys. I mean, what I'm doing here is pointing out the quality of the throws that Brady made. In addition to the ones he completed, there were three other ones that were just as good, if not better, throws. And so, Tom Brady through two games, yeah, does he look a little bit like a guy who's playing in an offense that isn't his native offense or his first language, you know, as an offense, if you will? Yeah, I mean, you know, they didn't have preseason. We talked about that, and I talked about how I think the effect of not having a preseason might be a factor early, but I don't think it'll be a factor all season long. And, you know, you only do a few. It's not like the preseason you play like four hardcore games. The starters don't go that deep into, and, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal, but it is a bit of a deal. And Brady right now looks like a guy who's still getting the hang of that, but to me it just means, hey, wait till he's completely comfortable. Wait till they have more live reps at this against other teams like they've gotten for two games worth now. I think it's only going to improve. And one of the big concerns in the offseason that we talked about with Brady being 43, you know, these things can happen quick sometimes. A guy can look just fine 1 year, and then the next year he looks still pretty okay, just maybe a skosh off of what he used to be, but no big deal, just a little older, but still fine. And then the year after that, boom, just like a carton of milk in your fridge where you like take a little whiff of and you're like, eh, I mean, that's okay for now. You know, I'm going to keep this milk. But then like 1 day later, you go, whoa, like it's, hey, I got to get rid of this. It's past its expiration date. Like that can happen. And I was worried about that with Brady. And I'm still worried about it a little bit. Anytime you have a 43-year-old quarterback, you should be. But that seems less of a concern now. Any type of issues with grasping the offense and being in sync and all that, notwithstanding, just physically, he looks really good. And his throws are fine. And, you know, they're opening a TB12 clinic over on Armenia by the bowling alley. And, you know, may have to check it out because I'm 40 and I want a little bit of whatever he's doing. Now I'm starting to believe it. I'm at least going to check the book out from the library. Let's put it that way. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to go that far yet. But I will now, I used to think it was, you know, goofy pseudoscience, and it still might be. I'm at least willing to read the TB12 book now and check that. I'm not giving up strawberries or anything, and I'm not going to make any avocado ice cream. But I will entertain the electrolyte water, and depending what else I read in the book, you know, we'll see. He looks good. He physically looks really good, doesn't he? Like, he looks like he's fine. Looks like he's got no issues. So that was nice to see. Couple of other things I wanted to hit, because I always like to, you know, whenever I rip someone, you know, it's easy to rip someone when they do something poorly and then they do something well and you just kind of gloss over it. You're like, oh yeah, whatever. No, you should come back and say when they do something well. So Donovan Smith had a real rough go of it in week one. He looked a lot better in week two. And I made that a part of my show last week, talking about how he was going to be a concern going forward if that's the Donovan Smith we're getting. And again, level of competition matters a ton. So it's not like you can simply say, oh, now he's good again. It was tougher against the Saints, the guys he was going up against. But he did well against Carolina. He actually even had a bit of a knee tweak and grinded it out. He did come out for one play. And on that one play, Josh Wells came in at left tackle. The Bucs ran it to that side with LeSean McCoy. Wells got blown up by Brian Burns on an inside move and dropped McCoy for a 5-yard loss. Then Donovan Smith came right back in. So in fairness, hats off to Donovan Smith, played well, played better, and did it all while he was, again, trying to deal with a bit of a knee tweak. And that's something that he deserves us to mention. If we're going to have any credibility, we got to say everything, not just the stuff that we complain about, but, you know, point out what someone does well also. But this offense is still a work in progress, and that's to be expected right now. Although, you know, what are the money stats to me on offense, too? I'll tell you this. Red zone percentage. How often are you converting points or drives down there into touchdowns instead of field goals? Those are 4-point swings when you don't, or sometimes they're 7-point swings if you can't get a field goal made. But the Bucs have had 6 red zone trips so far this year. They've scored touchdowns on 5 of them. That's big. That's counting both games, not just the game against Carolina. The other one, they have a field goal. So they've scored every time they've been in the red zone. 5 of the times it's been touchdowns. They've run 19 plays from the red zone. Brady is 7 of 9 with 2 TDs. Now, one of the things going on right now, and it's been talked about a little bit nationally, and you think of Rob Gronkowski all over the field, but you think of him in the red zone too, certainly, and that's the way that Gronkowski has had kind of a muted impact so far. Like I said before, he's got just 2 catches for 11 yards in both of the first 2 games. If you want to go for the full breakdown, he has gone out for 33 pass routes in 2 games. He's been targeted just 4 times. And again, there was another one on Sunday that doesn't count in those stats because it was pass interference, but that was the one he dropped. But just officially, 33 pass routes, 4 targets, 2 catches, 11 yards. He's been in the game on 73% of the snaps, so he's playing. And yet the Bucks just haven't gone to him that much. Now, I'm not saying, just like I complained when they said they want to have balance in the running game and they run it just to say they ran it, I don't want the Bucks to throw it to Gronkowski just to say they threw it to Gronkowski. Like, you should just be doing whatever's making your offense work. But it is strange they went out and got him for $9 million. And it's only two games, so I'm probably even bringing this up prematurely, but I thought I'd bring it up today because it's been talked about, and I wanted to play a clip in a minute of Dan Orlovsky on ESPN talking about it. You know, Bruce Arians, we know, is not a huge tight end guy. Like, his offense doesn't use a ton of tight ends. His quote when asked about it this week was that, "We're not throwing it 50 times to tight ends. That's what we have receivers for." He's like, if he's open, he'll get the ball, but our offense is our offense, and that's it. So, here's the first thing I'll say. And I agree with Dan Orlovsky on that. You know what? Let me play the clip first. Here's Dan Orlovsky talking about this on one of the NFL shows on ESPN. And I'll just play the clip from the other day when he was addressing Rob Gronkowski's role with the Bucs so far.
This one bothers me. First of all, why did you bring Gronk in? And then why did you keep O.J. Howard and not decide to move him for another receiver? Second of all, coaching in the NFL right now should not be about what the player's position grouping is. It is about, these are the pieces that we have. I don't care what position group you put them in. Your job is to find out where you can move those guys around to help them play well, help the offense play well. Find those matchup pieces. Look at the NFL offenses. Kansas City, Travis Kelce, Philadelphia, Zach Ertz, Baltimore and their tight ends with Mark Andrews, the Saints and Jared Cook. San Francisco, George Kittle. Last night, did he watch Monday Night Football? Like, did you watch Waller go off? And so they've got good receivers, but this is something where Bruce Arians should be going, I don't really care what we've labeled them. They should be pieces we move around. Tom Brady's notorious for that. So this one bothers me. I promise you it bothers Tom Brady hearing that. And so I think Bruce Arians needs to look at his team offensively as football players rather than certified or specific positions.
So first of all, I completely agree with what Orlovsky is saying there. Like I said before I played the clip, though, I think it's a little early to have this conversation. I do think that after, again, four games, six games, seven games, somewhere in there, if it's still like this, then you start to say, hey, what's going on? First of all, they didn't have as much time as normal to get themselves on the same page. Two, it's not the same offense they did this with in New England. And three, right now we're just going off something Bruce Arians said. Not, you know, it'd be one thing if multiple games into this, they're clearly not looking at him at all. But they didn't get him for no reason. Now, maybe you suspect, oh, well, they only got him because Brady made him. Brady convinced him, and that's why they did this, and they wanted to keep Brady happy. And, you know, that's possible, even though maybe Arians' personal views on it aren't that they needed him that much. But I don't think they would have done something that drastic without a plan to use him. And I think with time, we'll see more usage. He's only 31. Just like Brady physically, I don't think there's an issue with Gronkowski yet. Arians did reference, oh, I don't see him running by guys 20, 30 yards downfield anymore. He used the word anymore. I'm paraphrasing, but he did use that word. But I don't think like Gronk is like off or anything like that. I think the whole thing needs a little more time to marinate. But the Bucs' offense is not, I mean, their strength is their defense. I mean, their strength is their defense. And their offense is going to have to be productive for them to go anywhere, because that's the way the NFL works nowadays. You can't do it the way the 1999 Bucs or even the 2002 Bucs did. The 2002 Bucs improved their offense to complement that defense and won a Super Bowl, or the 2000 Ravens or anything like that. You know, you have to have both now. But this team's strength is its defense. DVOA overall through 2 weeks, Bucks are 11th. Offensively, they're 19th. Defensively, they're 4th. And that trend's probably not going to discontinue anytime soon. The secondaries looked really good. I mean, Antoine Winfield, by the way, I forgot to mention that about the Carolina game. Are you like me, like sitting there watching the game going, ooh, like we drafted this guy. It wasn't even a first-round pick, and we drafted this guy? Bucks drafts the past few years. Jason Light caught a lot of flack, you know, for having some empty-calorie drafts where they didn't really get anybody that actually ended up helping the team. That trend is reversed the past few years. But Antoine Winfield, he's up for Rookie of the Week. He may have, I'm not sure if they've announced it yet. I'm recording this on Thursday morning, but he had 11 tackles. He had the sack fumble. He's just everywhere on the field. He's comfortable. Like, he's not like, no, I'm not sure where to be. Like, we know athletically all these guys are good, but, you know, Antoine Winfield is totally in his element out there, and he's just all over the field. And he's looking more and more like a steal. It's only two games, I know, but, you know, Devin White is becoming... I remember the first couple games for Devin White, and he was hurt a little bit last year, but it was like, wow, Devin White, barely know he's there. And then he got back from injury, and he got better and better. Antoine Winfield already looks like a veteran out there. Bucs defense is going to be... I mean, that's what it's going to be, okay? And I was skeptical of him. It's been 2 weeks now. I don't think they played poorly at all in week one. They certainly played well in week two. And, you know, these are the factors you look at going forward. While the offense catches up, the defense is going to have to keep him in games. And here's another thing. The schedule lines up pretty well right now for the whole season. I mean, upcoming, they've got some games against some teams that are maybe ones you'd want to face early in the year while you're still trying to find your way. But even the whole 14 remaining games, half of those 14, and it's early, you can't tell anything yet, I know, but half of the 14 remaining games are against teams that are 0-2 after 2 weeks. They've got four games versus teams 2-0, and then the rest of them are against teams 1-1. So it's not last year's gauntlet early in the season that then gave way to some easier teams down the stretch. The Bucs kind of have a decent setup here schedule-wise, and that starts this week against the Broncos. They go to Denver, okay? If you're looking at it on paper, there's no reason to believe the Bucs shouldn't win the football game. Like I told you at the beginning of the show, Drew Locke is out. Jeff Driscoll, former Gator quarterback before he transferred to Louisiana Tech, is going to be the starter. Driscoll, and I liked him at UF. I mean, he wasn't bad at UF. He ended up transferring after the Gators brought in some other recruits. And he's only 1-7 as an NFL starter. But that, in and of itself, isn't the whole story. He actually came in when Locke got hurt against the Steelers this past Sunday. It was not going well for Denver. And he actually led them back into that game. They almost won the football game. He had two touchdown passes, threw for 200 and something yards, had them down inside the red zone at the end of the game to try and get the winning touchdown. They couldn't get it done, but he didn't play poorly at all. Yet he's not their starter. He's not Drew Locke. They brought in Blake Bortles, but he's not going to be ready to start, it doesn't look like, on Sunday. So Jeff Driscoll should be the starter. Then you've got Cortland Sutton, their best wideout, or one of their best wideouts, he's out for the season, so he won't play this week. Phillip Lindsay, the running back, both of their starting cornerbacks are out this week, and two defensive ends are out this week to go with all those offensive starters on a team that's 0-2. Now, in Denver's defense, they have lost two games by less than one score, and against two good teams, against the Titans last Monday night and against the Steelers on the road, going cross-country and playing the 1 o'clock kickoff for a Western team, which is always a little bit of a disadvantage. So it's not like they're a bad team. I don't. And, you know, when you talk about going to Denver, the Bucs, as a franchise, have only done it five times. They've only got one win in Denver, and that was at Mile High Stadium, the old stadium. They've never won. In fact, whatever the hell they call their stadium now in Denver. And I hate corporate names anyway, so I'm not going to bother to look it up. But it is one of nine NFL stadiums. I love Bucs historical trivia, so I looked this up. There's nine NFL stadiums where the Buccaneers have never won a football game. Not nine teams they don't have road wins against because they've won some in other stadium. I'm talking about nine current stadiums that they have not won in. Denver is one of those. They're 0-2 at this place. They were 1-2 at the old Mile High. They also have never won in Buffalo. They've never won at Jerry World in Dallas. They have one win at the old Cowboys Stadium, but not a win yet in Dallas. This news place at 0-2. They've never won at the Texans Stadium. They're 0-2 there. They did have a win at the Astrodome against the Oilers, I believe. I might be wrong about that. They've never won in Indy's new stadium. They had wins at the RCA Dome, but not at Indy's new stadium. Haven't played yet in Vegas. Haven't played yet against the Rams or the Chargers on the road in L.A. They are 0-3 at MetLife Stadium against the Giants and Jets. And they actually have a horrible record. I think they've only won one game ever in the Meadowlands, old or new stadium. And they're 0-4 in Nashville against the Titans, although they got hosed last year on that fake punt fumble thing that they got hosed on. They would have won the game. Anyway, point is, Denver's only one of nine they haven't gotten a win in, so a chance to make some Buccaneer history on Sunday. And regardless of the strength of the Broncos, which they've been a good franchise over the decades, but there is a little bit of a bias with the altitude. Like, that has historically helped them. If you're into really advanced analytics and stuff like that, it gives them a little extra half point to a point against the spread, just playing at home against teams that are not acclimated to the altitude. All that is stuff that bears itself out over dozens and hundreds of games. In any one game, it's not a, you know, huge factor. It's just something to keep in mind. But it's a tough place to win, no matter what. And the Bucs are going to have their work cut out for them this Sunday. Should they win? Of course they should win. They should beat this team. And I don't know, what's the spread right now? Let me check that. Because the Buccaneers should be favored. I mean, even being on the road, I would think they'd be favored by at least 3. Let's play a little guess that line, because I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to guess the Bucs are 4-point favorites against the Broncos, given all the injuries on Sunday. So let's see. The line I'm showing right now is, a little drum roll, I bring this up. Tampa Bay is a 6-point favorite. So there you go. That's a little juicy, to be honest with you. A little juicy. But I get it with all the injuries, you know, and that could move between now and Sunday, but Bucks are a 6-point favorite. So you look at their injury situation, and although this will also be the first time the Bucks have played in front of fans in 2020 because they didn't have fans in New Orleans. No fans at Raymond James this past weekend for the Carolina game. Denver's going to have it where they've got about 5,700 or so fans, mainly season ticket holders, spread out around the place. So it's better than nothing. I honestly, and I, you know, everybody's got different regulations and things like that, but I feel like, especially Mile High or whatever they call this version of Mile High, it's a big stadium. I feel like you could get like 10, 15, 20,000 in there and have nobody get anywhere near each other if you wanted to. I guess they're doing baby steps and starting out with 5,700, maybe going up from there. But I mean, if you put each section just couple hundred people and spread out, anyway, 5,700 is what they're going to go with. And so injury report wise for the Bucks, it looks pretty good. Of course, Chris Godwin was out last week in the concussion protocol. He's ready to go. He's back. And then you've got Mike Evans, who was nursing the hamstring even in that game, even though he played well against Carolina. Now it shouldn't be any issue at all with him. Justin Watson does have a little wrist thing, and we'll see if he ends up being back or not. He looked like he hurt himself pretty good, but either way, nothing major on the injury report for the Bucs. So the Broncos injuries, I mean, the thing about it is, like Driscoll, for example, who, again, I don't think is a bad quarterback at all. Maybe I'm a little biased after having followed him at the University of Florida, but, you know, if the Bucs can force the Broncos, you know, by getting a lead early and force the Broncos into lots of throwing situations, it would only help their cause there. He is a drop-off from Drew Lock, and again, not having Cortland Sutton. And they do have KJ Hamler, who is a pretty good downfield threat, I suppose. But, you know, one matchup I would say to watch, and this was something I was reading a little, like, advanced stat stuff about the game coming up Sunday, is Shaquille Barrett is going to be going up against a guy for Denver, right tackle Elijah Wilkinson, who ranks, if you're into the advanced numbers, pass blocking efficiency. We talked about pass block win rate last week. Denver's right tackle Wilkinson ranks 42nd out of 55 qualifying tackles in pass blocking efficiency. So that's a spot where maybe Shaquille Barrett lined up across from him could chow a little bit this week. And then that, you know, and then you got a backup quarterback you're going after, and it all kind of snowballs from there. That's what I'm hoping and envisioning. And so we'll see. We'll see. But it does look like, on paper, a good situation for the Bucs here if you forget about the history. And what the Bucs did in Denver 15 years ago has nothing to do with this game. Historically, this franchise has not done well in Denver. Doesn't mean anything for this weekend. And they got a guy in Tom Brady who's played plenty of games in Denver on his own and done pretty okay. So email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. That's BobbyGameDay. The fridge schedules. It's week 3 now, but it's not too late. If you still want to get one on your fridge, I've gotten dozens of emails. I've sent out dozens of schedules. I, again, make a fridge schedule. I type it up. I put the color logos for each team. I put the Bucks logos on top. It looks great on the side of my fridge. You can spruce up your, whatever it's your fridge, your office, your workshop, and your garage. Every time you walk by, it reminds you it's football season, reminds you that it's a game week, and there's a Bucks game in just a few days. And I always like to write the score and win or loss up there. And I've got them all through the years. I save them all. So if you want one, just email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo, and I'll send it back out to you and get that out if you're interested. It's a great time for Tampa sports right now. Another big sports weekend. Last night, the Lightning won Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. They're up 2-1. Game 4 is on Friday night. Game 5 is on Saturday night. Conceivably, you know, if they won out, which I'm not saying they're going to do that, but if they were to win the next two, they could be clinching the Stanley Cup on Saturday night. It's going to be a dogfight. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. This thing could very well still go 7 or even less, but I got a good feeling about things with this Lightning team. And so you got that going on. You got the Rays. I mean, almost simultaneously last night when I was here at the house, I got the Lightning on the big screen. They're winning their game in the Stanley Cup Final. And I got the Rays on my laptop. They're clinching the American League East for only the third time in their history and first time since 2010. And I know it's a short season, but it's the same for everybody. They've played their 60 games. The Rays are the AL East champions. That's pretty cool. So it's all happening at once. And they're not going to play on the same day like they did in Week 1 when the Bucks played the Saints and the Rays and the Lightning were also playing, because you got the Rays playing both Saturday and Sunday, but the Lightning game Saturday night, the Bucks game Sunday. It's going to be a great sports weekend. It really is. COVID is obviously horrible, but having all these things happening at the same time after a lot of them got postponed has kind of resulted in, October is going to be really fun when you get the baseball playoffs going too, but with the hockey playoffs now and baseball and football. And just enjoy it, folks. Get your weekend, get your dual screen set up if you can do it. Run some coax from wherever your extra cable outlet is. Get it figured out, because there's too much going on and you can't miss any. It's not just important stuff. It's like postseason stuff for the Rays and for the Lightning. And, of course, in football, every game feels like a postseason game. So enjoy your weekend. Be safe. I'll be back next week. Looking forward to this Bucks game on Sunday. Love the 4:25 start. Always enjoy those. And then we get a 1 o'clocker the week after that before we start a run of prime time. All the stuff we've been talking about for years and years. Monday nights, Sunday nights. It's all going to get going here as we go through the schedule. So in the meantime, I want to thank the Joes for giving me this platform as always. They make it, first of all, it's a privilege for me to be on the best place anywhere on the internet for Bucks coverage, JoeBucksFan.com. I could do my own podcast, and maybe a few of you would listen, but I can't do any better than having the Joes put me in front of you guys willingly, and I appreciate that from them every week. The best place anywhere for Bucks coverage. Thanks to you guys for listening. Thanks to our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford, and thanks to all of you. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you next week, and no matter what you do or where you are, be safe, have fun, and wherever you are, go Rays. Go Lightning, go Bucks. And good morning, good afternoon, and good night.